There is room for doubt in my mind as to whether this plastic was indeed a synthetic product or some natural substance, the like of which we do not have here on Earth. The top half was transparent but heavily tinted. The bottom opaque and grayish, brown. I guess you could say it was even vaguely pyramidal in shape, but it had a squashed and stretched outlook compared to a conventional pyramid. There were no wheels, and it sat a few inches above the ground, even though it was not yet in motion. If you could imagine a stealth fighter cockpit without wings, you would not be far off the mark. Now isn't that a coincidence? How does this thing work? I asked. Part mind, power, part magnetic repulsion, was Xena's reply. You guide, I'll provide the power, she said, sliding back the top section. Like this, she was reaching over and moving a slider from side to side. This is the manual way of doing it. I don't think you're quite up to doing that by pure thought yet, Alec. I doubt it, I was thinking to myself, without sending the thought to her. Yes, I had at last learned to keep some thoughts to myself. Looks easy enough, I said confidently as I got into the car. Just set the slider, that's right. Straight ahead is in the middle, sliding it to the right side will turn us right at the next available intersection. Don't worry, she emphasized, it won't turn until the road's guides let it. Then it will reset to the middle. I'll navigate, she said. I was hesitant. Come on, let's go, she added impatiently, and do not forget your extra eye protection. These glasses or goggles were an event in themselves. The only way to describe how they were attached is to say they simply stuck to your face or suit, covering material without any other support. There was some sort of interaction of materials, as far as I could tell. As we made to leave, Xena's other parent arrived home and I was introduced to him. His name was Thrus, but don't hold me to this name or any other name as it is an appropriate interpretation only. The car's guidance system had me puzzled. As the vehicle did not actually touch the ground, how did it know how to turn? It was suspended above the road by a form of magnetic repulsion, the details of which I did not get into but which didn't seem all that complex. I'm sure it could be reproduced here on Earth without too much trouble. Anyway, I'm sure it knew where it was on the road. Perhaps it used a form of satellite navigation, of GPS, global positioning system, as it is sometimes known here on Earth, if they still had something as primitive on Haven. Unfortunately, I could not interpret the symbols that I saw on the dashboard as the suits were only good for interpreting the thought language. The car was of particular interest to me as I've been involved in all aspects of motor sport back on Earth. It seemed to be capable of immense speed, not that I could have read a speedo even if it had won. We would have exceeded speeds of 160 kph, 100 miles per hour. It was more like being in a low, flying aircraft. Later when we were traveling on these high, speed sections of road, I noticed a small light was blinking on the dash but it would go off whenever we slowed down. I think we may have been exceeding a predetermined speed limit. Knowing Xena as I did by then, this wouldn't have surprised me at all. Meanwhile, not too far into the trip, Xena thought it timely to discuss some delicate issues with me. Now that we are alone again, she said with a more deliberate and much slower thought pattern than usual, there is something I would like to ask you to consider. It is both personal to the both of us and yet far reaching at the same time. I do not expect or want an answer immediately. With the tests you took on the transporter, I said I would get back to you when the results were analyzed. Well, I have seen them, and they're just what we hoped they might be. Your immune system is of much interest to us, as we expected it to be. We have tested others from your planet. There are others like you, but they not all are compatible. There are many factors to be considered. While it is of much interest to some of the elders who are involved with the breeding program, health stability is not the only important consideration. We have also been searching for other qualities, qualities which have been lying dormant in most of your race since its inception. Those who can now use these qualities, as you can, are more suited for our cause. You know of what I speak? She paused as if expecting me to say something, but at the time I could not think of anything appropriate or related to the subject. You must have some idea about them, you must know, she continued. You might have to help me here, I suggested to her. What was it with this people? Was I out the last time they called, or something? There was a flash of ideas across my mind, images which left me with some almost long, forgotten memories. There is nothing more certain. I have had a few close dices with death throughout my life, but I have never really given them much thought, except on terms of looking back, and thinking how lucky I was to have survived. How did you know about them? I asked. From the tests, she answered. The first near-death experience that was reconstructed for me occurred when I was 15 or 16 years old. I used to hang the mast of a small yacht I owned upon the wall inside my father's garage. There was a fuse, box and power points on the same wall at about the height the mast would be placed. And Alec continues explaining this most incredible challenge of survival. In his book, my second dice with death came a few years afterwards, and repeated itself in an almost carbon copy episode at a slightly later date. It makes you wonder if whether someone thought I needed the practice. I really do feel I went somewhere outside my body during these two experiences. I was sailing, dinghy racing, this time. 10 years on. I was racing again, but this time a single, seated race, car. The construction techniques back then were more aligned to lightweight and speed rather than safety. The car also had an open cockpit, just like a Formula I car. I had just spun off the track, well, I was learning, and was in the process of rejoining it at perhaps a faster pace than was prudent. And Alec, again, explains his incredible experience. But I am sorry, as the book is still current, I will not reproduce the whole description online. It would appear that as a race of beings we have the ability to interact and influence our immediate environment using only the power of our minds. At this stage in our development, this ability apparently only manifests itself under extreme circumstances, such as in life, threatening situations. The ability to leave and return to the body while still alive is not an uncommon phenomenon, I should think. To me, this would suggest there is more to us than the physical self. If we can leave the body while we are still alive, and I think I have, then surely we can leave the body when it is dead. There was a link between this out-of-body phenomenon and their interest in me, but I cannot expand on it for it is something that is outside my knowledge pool. Xena still had this question to ask. I would like you to think about joining the breeding program along with me. There is much yet we have to learn and much we have yet to do. I do not want you to think that this was the only reason why we have given you this experience with us, for you are here for your own reasons as well as for anything you may be able to help us with. If you turn down this request, I and the others will not think less of you. I know you do not know who we are. Or, more accurately, you do not remember who we are, and you humans rather think your bodies are important. I know and understand this better than most around me, for I, too, have a feeling about my own body that the elders do not understand. It took me a full 5 seconds to say yes to her question. Now, Alec, this is serious, Xena stated earnestly. Too right, I replied. I've already thought about it, ages ago, when you first mentioned the scheme to me back on the ship, transporter. Thank you, she said, looking straight at me. Now I want to show you my favorite spot in the desert. We can talk more about the program tonight at home. Chapter 13. Desert Surprises. On Haven, they do not need to farm the land, so they have left most of it untouched. The plant life was scarce though. There were no trees that I could see and, stranger still perhaps, no real mountains or higher ground, just gently sloping hills. Gradually at first, but after a few more miles it was as dry as I had ever seen anything to be on Earth. We appeared to be climbing for the last 20 miles or so. The terrain was now a reddish, brown color and quite rocky, possibly not unlike the planet Mars in our own system. The Haven Sun had a red tinge to it, so this perhaps was helping turn the land escape this unusual color. There was no vegetation at all, this far out. Take the next right, Xena indicated. It is not far now. This will do, Xena said, opening the roof and jumping out. The first thing that struck me was the heat. It was ferocious out there, and, to make it worse, there was no wind. Our suits carried their own insulation for protection against both heat and cold, but the intensity of this heat went through that insulation barrier. We both put on an extra layer of eye protection. Do not worry, there is shade from the sun at my lookout point, Xena said, obviously picking up on my uncomfortable interaction with the environment. At this point I was not tempted to pick any of the interesting rocks that were lying about and protruding from the ground, as I usually would do. Their appearance was more of opaque glass than anything else, and some looked like glazed pottery. The ground was covered not in sand but in a fine powder which swirled about our feet as we walked through it. Once again, there was an eerie silence that seemed to dominate the land. If I ever needed confirmation that I was not on Earth, this was it. At last, sheltered from the burning sun, I picked away at some of the glazed outcrops of rock that projected from the face of the cutting. There were no layers as you might expect. It was a mix of different but smallish pieces which were almost in suspension, more like a fruitcake mix. Come on, she said impatiently, ushering me forward. You're always picking at something or other. There's time for that later. Wait until you see what is around the corner. It was just a short walk before we were perched upon a cliff, top with a view that almost defies description. Before us lay a vast rift canyon which I suspect would be more than twice the size of the Grand Canyon back on Earth, although I have not had the privilege of seeing that mighty landmark in real life. For the first time, Xena went out of her way to sit close to me. Oh, man, was all I could think to say on looking over out the canyon. Another curious response, I heard Xena say in the back of my mind. How far down? I asked. Almost 4 of your miles at the deepest point, she replied. Impressive, is it not? It was opened up in a monumental earthquake, sometime around those dimensional experiments you were studying last night. There have been no recorded earthquakes on our planet now for thousands of years and we are not expecting any more. I have been coming here for 20 years, since my early days. We came out to study the composition of the rocks down there on the valley floor, she said. I was unable to do anything but marvel at the various rock strata that lay exposed before me. In any case, Xena took my mind off the view in front of me. May I try something? She asked. It has been a puzzle to me since one of our talks on the transporter. Whatever, I replied. She leant over and, out of the blue, kissed me right on the lips. She then withdrew with a puzzled look on her face. Just as puzzled, I was looking back at her. Dear reader, I hope one day you will satisfy your own curiosity and find yourself absorbed in the pages of Alex's book. What did or did not happen at this point in Alex's narration will not appear online. Sorry. Alec continues, please remember, this was just an experiment as far as Xena was concerned, and she was soon explaining other facets of the Great Rift Canyon to me. As we were leaving the canyon area, I spotted some interesting rocks. Curiosity killed the cat, so to speak, and as I was trying to reach them I slipped and fell a small distance, grazing my face and damaging the suit in the process. Xena was most concerned, but I told not to worry as this type of thing happened back on Earth all the time. It is not the fall that concerns me most, she stated. Out here, with this sun and no suit, you would not last very long. Quick, cover that side of your face with your hand. It's only a small area, I pointed out. Cover it up, Xena reiterated most insistently. I obeyed. And just as well, too, as I still have a patch of skin in that area which will not heal properly. If I wanted to bring proof of my adventures, there were surely less dangerous ways of doing it. That little act necessitated a new suit for me, and I lost some of my sightseeing time because of it. Later, back at the house, Xena's parents welcomed us. They, too, were concerned about my accident. There seemed much fuss over what, to me, was a non-event at the time. We entered into a discussion of the state of the haven atmosphere, which was brought on by all this attention over my slight injury. My thoughts, though, drifted back to Earth and the problems with our ozone layer. I couldn't help but wonder, if they were ever to make it back to our planet in some form, would they be jumping out of the frying pan and into the fire? Chapter 14. Dreams Made of Legends. As I sat together with Xena and her parent elders, we discussed many things. It was indeed a strange situation. You could say that my presence in the home of these people was an experiment on their behalf. But the experimenter was also observing those who would propose to do the experimenting. These observations I made while in their company may be worthy of your attention. 1. The entity known to me as Xena was as much as a mystery to her parent elders as she was to me. This new breed was exhibiting emotions on a scale never before encountered by these people. 2. Xena herself, up until that time, was no more aware than her parents of where these emotions might lead her. In effect, she was navigating uncharted waters. 3. It seemed to me that these amazing beings, the elders, were almost looking to me for advice on how to deal with this little, understood phenomenon. That last statement may not sound so dramatic, but these were super, intelligent beings. Even Xena TMS intelligence level was far higher than my own. Our discussions were not always so serious, however, and because of this I cannot confirm the importance or accuracy of this next piece of information. Just like us, these people are not without their legends and time-honored stories. One such legend was both startling and disturbingly coincidental to me, but before I relate it to you it would be best if I explained why it had such an effect on me. Around the age of 10 I had a repetitive dream, not too dissimilar in content and presentation to the legend Yeti I am about to relate. But for some reason, the location, my family home in Pippaburra, a small town to the south of Auckland City, seemed to be the key. I cannot remember having the dream but there. Although 25 years have passed since I last had this dream, it is still clear in my mind. I would now like to share it with you and, after that, compare it with the most interesting legend of Xena TMS people. The dream. Our airborne survey craft slid silently and smoothly over the jungle below. The succulent green overlay of tropical rainforest was beginning to look as if it was not going to provide us with any area large enough to land in, let alone set up our seismic and geothermal gear. From a height of 1,000 meters, 3,000 feet, the heavy cloud cover was not exactly a help, either. Arriving in the humid tropical afternoon, we knew it would be this way, hot and wet, conditions not on the top of our must experience list. There were even doubts as to why we were surveying this area at all, as it was not compatible with our biological systems. The silence on board was so intense as to be almost pervasive. Now that we were here, we would do what had been asked of us as quickly as possible and then leave. The craft was thermionically insulated, but some of us would have to spend time on the surface and we were not looking forward to it. This was the first time on this visit that we had ventured any great distance from our base camp far to the south. It was situated in an area with cooler climate, chosen because it was more in keeping with the native conditions of our upbringing. The valley to be surveyed ran roughly in a north-south direction, with a range of highly active and somewhat intimidating volcanoes to the west, far too close for comfort as far as this survey party was concerned. To the east, some low hill country ran on down to the sea, which was some distance off and out of sight to us from our current position. We at TMLL have to launch the scout craft and get down a little closer to the surface to find an area, or we shall be here 8 until next sunrise, was the thought from the flight deck. ETMLL go and load it up, then, I can clearly recall replying. As I was loading the seismic gear into the tight confines of the surface interface or scout vehicle, for some reason I looked up and caught my own reflection in the highly polished night, landing light reflector. What I saw gave me a start. How could that be me? What was going on here? All that was around me appeared familiar, but the face and body in that reflector were not. For one, my entire body, even the face, was a light blue, grey, and the whole affair was rather frail, looking as well. I looked down at my hands, and as if seeing them for the first time I stood up and held them out in front of me. The three fingers and thumb on each hand were long and delicate and had no nails. I looked up at the reflector. The two eyes that looked back were a deep, dark blue, set about halfway down the hairless head, which looked oversized to what I felt should have been there. I reached up and touched that head. Was it really mine? Yes, I could feel it, and then the moment was gone. I was loading the rest of the equipment as if nothing had never been amiss. It was decided that just three of us would descend, as we needed no more than that to set up the equipment. There was no need to risk others on the ground with volcanic eruptions imminent. As I was in charge of the equipment, that meant that only two from the flight deck would be required to accompany me. It was decided that only males would be considered, even though the best geologist on board was female. We had too few females with us on this trip and we were not about to put any of them at risk. Most of the on-site information would be fed back on board anyhow, so we should be able to analyze it almost immediately. If there was going to be any danger to the ground party, there would be almost no delay in relaying the information back to us. We would not need any encouragement to clear the area. As we exited the mothership, we could see her silhouetted against the now clearing sky. Her silver, blue bulk shimmering as she reflected the sun's EMS rays. The huge pyramidal shape was familiar and reassuring to us as we descended to a height just above the treetops. Evening was not too far away, and the shadows in the trees below made it difficult to find a suitable place to land. Looks a little better over there to the right. If we give those volcanoes as much room as we can, EATMLL feel better about it. Came the thoughts from in front of me. No arguments here, I replied. Look. See that? Dot. It RTMS gone. What was that? Dot. Did you see it? Came the questions from up front. I had two faces staring at me in wonder. Don't you TMT worry, I replied. The monitor will have picked it up. EATMLL replay when we at Madown. Every and your TMS thoughts merged as all eyes were diverted to the viewing ports. We're TMD been here before, but there was always a surprise or two on planets that were still in their basic evolutionary infancy. I thought all the really big stuff was extinct, I commented, waiting for someone to convince me this was so. Some space right below us now. Not very much, but it should be sufficient, came the thoughts from up front again. You both realize that it will be dark by the time we get all this equipment laid out, I added. This statement was followed by an uneasy silence. As you have not lived in my dream before, it is best I give you some background to it. This information seems to come with the dream, even though I do not know quite how I learnt of it. This planet we were searching for future colonization and seeding was average in most respects, but larger than we at TMD prefer to have been working on. It was about 4 billion years old, just settling down, as it were. It was the second planet out from its sun and nicely situated as far as climate goes, if you don't your TMT mind to be cooked alive. We, as such, had originally come from the fourth planet of this same system, a planet we called Kyber, which had formed and matured many millions of years earlier than this planet we were now on. But that fourth planet no longer exists, it was lost to us many millennia ago. Only a precious few of us made it off in time, and some who did ended up on what was the third planet of our system at that time. This planet you will know by the name Mars. In fact, Mars was known to Atmusa TM from then on as Murdi Kyber, Murdi meaning second, our second home. However, it was always only a temporary solution. The destruction of our original planet also severely damaged the atmosphere of Mars, but at the time our technology was not so great and we could not risk traveling further than the Red Planet. To have made it even that far was considered a miracle then. After the passing of much time, we developed our technology to such an extent that we now travel the galaxy and beyond. Mars was already a dead planet as far as surface life was concerned, and had been for many years, although there were still a few of our kind trying to eke out an existence there in underground bases. We went on to colonize a few other planets, but this system was still home to us. We had been waiting for this second planet, known to you as Earth, to settle and cool. Colonization had been tried here in the past, but it was destroyed several times due to the over-eagerness of settlers and the instability of the crust. Things were now looking a little more encouraging. This time frame would be of an age known to you as approximately 2 million years BC. Seeding was also our intention. By this I mean that we would genetically modify an existing species to perform tasks for us like manual labor, with the idea that eventually they would colonize the planet in their own right. There were a few candidates for that task on this planet, and some work had already been done on these entities by those earlier, unsuccessful colonists. Our task at that moment, however, was only to find sites for possible future colonization. Back to the dream itself. The scout craft landed vertically in an area on the eastern side of the valley, approximately 10 kilometers, 7 miles, distant from the line of active volcanoes. Within an hour we had set all the instruments in place. At ground level it was now dark. We used lasers to clear the area but had set them to cut only the light vegetation, leaving the trees in place. No one saw or heard anything out of place during this time. To protect the instruments from accidental damage by wandering native livestock, and for our own peace of mind, we had set up laser intercept lines around the external perimeter of our camp. These lasers were not set on such low cutting levels. We were there for the night, so we're taking no chances. Protecting ourselves from the dangers of geothermal activity was not quite as easy, however, as the ground was rocked by minor tremors almost constantly. Despite our choosing this unstable valley for our survey, it was as stable an area as any on the planet. It was also rich in the mineral deposits that the new colonists would need in the future. Reference: the area of land I am describing to you is that which used to lie to the north of what is now known as Trinidad, Tobago, Barbados and Martinique. At the time this area was part of one large land mass. A little further to the south there was a large inland sea or lake. It was always about now that I would awaken from this dream, as if the next portion was best not remembered. I can even recall trying to write about it many years ago, but it had no context, perhaps it still does not. Always, though, it has been the same green, steamy rainforest with me looking up at the canopy of trees and succulent tropical plants, knowing that this was Earth in some other time frame, but I was never able to remember what came next. Did I die back then due to some catastrophe of nature? Is that why I am here on Earth now, to complete my life cycle on this planet? Who could know? You may tell me this is only typical of any 10-year-old dream world. But why should a dream last for 14 years without changing? And why did I have this recurring dream only at the one address? Before comparing my dream to the Haven legend, I shall digress briefly to relate something that happened to me at about the same time this dream became such a large part of my life. I should say they must be related, but is everything ever that certain in our lives? This other event is even more bizarre and makes the dream pale into insignificance, for it happened in the physical world and in real time. It involved my taking a trip to hospital due to suspected appendicitis, which was confirmed as such after my arrival was confirmed. I was made ready for an operation, but while I was waiting in the ward I was visited by the strangest of apparitions. The apparition was of a small girl, not more than a meter tall. She appeared pale, almost transparent, and looked thin and sickly. I did not doubt for one moment that she needed to be in hospital. She had the most unusual eyes, however, that were quite large for her size, but the most striking thing about them was their color. Until very recently I had never seen their like before. They were blue, but not blue, in fact, they were much deeper than that. With the advantage of hindsight, I would now say they were violet. I could not be mistaken on this account as she moved right up to me and touched my stomach. As she did this, she looked right into my eyes as if to understand my pain. In a blink she was gone, and so was that pain. I never had the operation that day. You might say ETMM still waiting to have it.